Hey, Matt Rothschild here, host of the Wisconsin Forward podcast all across the Civic Media Radio Network and at civicmedia.us. For the next several episodes of the Wisconsin Forward podcast, I'm going to be interviewing Democratic candidates for governor. Joining me now on the Wisconsin Forward podcast is Ryan Sternhat, who's running for governor. You may have heard his ads on the Civic Media Radio Network. Ryan Sternhat, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Well, it's my pleasure. I just always like to start off interviews with the most obvious question. So why are you running for governor?
I feel I can make a difference. I feel I'm outgoing. And I believe that I have some good pro-working ideas that could benefit the entire state of Wisconsin.
What are some of those pro-working ideas?
Really stick up for the working class. Stick up for people who want to make money. I joined the Democratic Party 24 years ago after I ran as Republican for state assembly in 2000, lost, came on board with the Democrats then, and they really welcomed me with my pro-worker beliefs. I really enjoyed being a part of the Democratic Party, and now after all these years, I finally get to run as a Democrat. And I'll also be working at eliminating Act 10 and getting rid of right-to-work legislation first chance I get.
So tell me a little bit about your background. Were you raised in a Republican family? Is that why you were a Republican at the beginning, or what attracted you to the Republican Party at that point, 25 years ago or whenever?
A few things. My dad, he really grew up as a Republican, and I grew up during the Ronald Reagan administration, and I know he had a big influence on a whole lot of people. Few would debate that. And with also me being a military veteran, you know, it pretty much got me to start thinking Republican views. And then when I joined the ran for assembly in South Milwaukee in 2000, I did bring some pro-worker beliefs in that race, be more of a Republican in name only. And after losing, I lost to the late Jeff Plaley, and I was basically a token candidate. So I decided to join the Democratic Party right after that.
You mentioned Ronald Reagan. What do you make of Reagan? What did you make of Reagan at the time? What do you make of Reagan retrospectively?
Big difference. I looked it up. I was in the third grade when Ronald Reagan took over, became our president, and I was in the 11th grade when his term ended. So I really was growing up in school and looked at Ronald Reagan as, the powerful man. I mean, he was very respected. I really didn't think much about politics or both sides back then. And I know bipartisanship happened a lot more back then than it does now, in my opinion. But then retrospectively, when I look at Ronald Reagan, he made some key mistakes. I mean, he fired the air traffic controllers. That was not good move on his part, regardless of what it said in the air traffic controller's contract. And I know he was making a move by appointing the first female U.S. Supreme Court justice in Sandra Day O'Connor, but that move tended to backfire him because Sandra Day O'Connor's legacy was to rule on either side. So I think that too backfired him. And Ronald Reagan could have been more of a pro-military president, which I was surprised he wasn't, as you look in retrospect. Just look at the bombing of the barracks back in 1983.
The barracks there in Lebanon?
Correct, yes.
Okay. And, of course, there was Iran-Contra, too, which was a huge screw-up.
Yes, it was.
So tell me a little bit about what you think your qualifications are to be governor.
Well, I'm known for, with me, being an in-seat beer vendor at the Brewers Stadium. I've been working at Brewers Stadium since really the late 80s, and I joined the union there in 1998 when I went from selling soda in the seats to beers in the seats, which I joined the union. I became a union steward. I took part in four different negotiating committees, including one we last had. And about 8 years ago, I took it a step further as I turned in my union steward spot and started a political action committee and became a lobbyist for the group called Drinks in the Seats, which I've created and trademarked. And there have been some politics going on at the stadium, as there always is, including the workers there, including alcohol sales there. So I made some waves back over the years when the brewers and the concessionaire who we worked for, Delaware North Companies, wanted to add more concession stands. And I tried to go to City Hall to stop the floor plan from that happening. I also unfortunately, I failed at that attempt. But and then we had the coronavirus restrictions there. And I took a rare step for a Democrat back then to fight against the coronavirus restrictions, simply because we were having crowd sizes in the year 2020 that went into the year 2021. And even though we have to take some safety precautions, our jobs were eliminated for a year and a half there. And I was vocal in the year 2021 when they started allowing crowds back at baseball games and everywhere else in the country to allow for in-seat beer vending to happen again, because we were simply without a beer vending job in the seats for that year. And then finally, midway through the 2021 season, we got our beer vending jobs back.
What were you doing in the interim there when things were shut down during COVID?
Well, I work elsewhere too. I do have a full-time job. I work in a factory, third shift. I'll leave it at that. And I'm still associated with the dry cleaners as well, where usually in the winter time when there's no baseball, I pick up some hours there, work at a front desk or drive a truck or something, make some deliveries. But I definitely keep busy.
And tell me what you thought should have happened during COVID.
I just wish that the elected officials, they really didn't get a second opinion. They put a lot of stock into whatever Dr. Fauci said. And I know that when all the restrictions happened, it happened just a few weeks before the baseball season was supposed to start, and we were expecting to have our beer vending jobs where we get paid commission tips and at normal. And we're hearing elected officials say, oh, that's it. We're, nothing more than a 200-person crowd size or whatever. And I just wish that some more care would have been put into that when you think of everyone, not just the baseball players. But when you make decisions like that, sure, you may think that you're saving lives and all that, which is super important, don't get me wrong. But I wish there could have been some more thinking before that, and maybe do like a step-by-step, so to speak, let it go for a month or whatever, which they started to do so, but what turned out to be just a temporary hold on things for a few weeks turned out to be a complete shutdown for the rest of that calendar year. So I wish they would have put more care in everyone's jobs before they went ahead and made that decision on the crowd sizes.
I mean, we could argue it forever, but it wasn't just Dr. Fauci. Public health officials all across the country were predicting if there wasn't a shutdown, there were going to be 2.5 million dead Americans. So that was kind of and Trump himself had admitted that was the number that he was looking at. So it was a tough situation, especially for people directly impacted like you, and for kids couldn't go to school, and for a whole bunch of millions of other Americans. But it was certainly a healthcare pandemic crisis. My wife's a public health nurse, so was all about, the public health protections. But I understand in hindsight, there's a lot of second guessing on what should happen, shouldn't have happened. But let's get back to the governor's race a little bit. People listening to this are going to say, okay, here's a guy who's a beer vendor at Brewer Stadium working third shift. I mean, anyone can be governor, but what are your political experiences, qualifications that might strike a listener as someone they could get behind?
Well, it's that. I pitch myself as a one of us candidate. That's kind of an unofficial slogan of mine, where I can naturally say that I know what it's like to have working class experience and to govern as if I were in the regular voting citizen's shoes. As far as my experience, true, I don't have elected experience, but I have some lobbying experience. I have some negotiation experience. And I have some resiliency experience, too, which I feel I can stand up to whoever it is and stand my ground if need be. And if we have hurt feelings, so be it. I'd love to work with people, and maybe have to go as far as vetoing an entire budget if we want to get something done. So I would have the goal and the willpower to want to do that if possible.
Do you think Governor Evers should have vetoed the last budget or the one prior to that in its entirety?
Really, yes. And I'll tell you why, because that was his only real weapon with the houses being both of Republican Assembly and Senate. That could have been a viable option to him, especially when it comes to taxing the wealthy. And so, and then there was a lot of back and forth going on between the parties, and the budget came right before 4th of July, if I believe. And then our state was backed up to whatever Donald Trump was doing, where a lot of hospital funds were in jeopardy. So we all remember he had to sign it at 1 a.m. So, I mean, that's kind of a different situation. But, I think if Tony could have done a better job with the budget, he would have vetoed the whole thing.
What was the worst part of the budget? Do you think that had you been there, you would have wanted to see the whole thing vetoed?
The lack of taxes for the wealthy. And then two, the lack of funding for schools. I know that was kind of a complaint among some of the Democrats who are in the legislature as well.
I saw an interview with you about the environment. I looked at your website. You talk about protecting the environment, but doing it sensibly. You said in one interview, you don't believe there should be any emission controls on vehicles. Why do you think that?
I think that because I used it as a compensation, and I said this in my press conference, my announcement I made back in late August, that when I picked up a trash receptacle. It's right here. But nevertheless, and so I said, as an alternative, go to the hardware store, buy a $15 trash recyclable receptacle, the one I just showed you, and we could do recycling more there. I live in an apartment right here in Maguanago, and myself and my fellow tenants do a real good job of filling that receptacle, that the one that gets picked up by the village of Maguanago every week. We got that thing full of recycled cardboard, plastics, aluminum, you name it. Now, I believe, though, that this, I think that with the emissions test I want to see gone, is because it happens where a lot of people who own cars simply are sucking right now for money. And when they get that notice in the mail that they have to get their, not only get their registration every other year, but it comes, well, this year you need to pass your emissions test. If that check light engine is, if that check engine light is on, you'll automatically fail your test. And in most cases, you have to go to the auto parts store and buy a device costing a few hundred dollars to get the thing fixed. And I just think that we can do without these emissions tests right now. Other states don't do it. The reason why Wisconsin has it, because we have two big cities, big enough cities, Milwaukee and Madison, which forces us to do it. So, like I said, we'll trade in the emissions test, but we'll push for recycling more.
Forgive me, but that just sounds awfully simplistic, given the amount of pollution caused by car emissions. You could recycle from here to, you know, six ways to Sunday, and you're not going to recover as many footprints as you would if you do car emissions. I mean, getting rid of car emissions is just to make pollution and global warming and climate change even worse than it is now. No amount of recycling is going to solve that or compensate for that.
I hear where you're coming from. It's just we have to sacrifice in the environment right now. You see how times are. I mean, people are hurting for money right now. So we'll try that. And I just think that that could be the way to go.
Another plank on your website is back the police. I know a lot of the protests for police reform came after George Floyd was murdered by a police officer up in Minneapolis. Don't you think issues of police brutality are important to address?
Well, it's important for elected officials, including a governor, to pay attention to. I will say this. I went to the police academy at Milwaukee Area Technical College. I never became a police officer. I was married at the time. We had a kid, and we did some other things. But my dad is a retired federal law enforcement. I'll tell you this. I know police officers. Those police officers are very brave and they're dedicated to their jobs. They're married to their jobs. It's easy to take those people for granted, but we really need them here. We really do. I've been to the police academy. Those police officer recruits, the cops, they're trained. They're trained real good. They're trained real tough. And they have to go through that training every year. They're like 24 hours a year to re-up their training. But again, I have yet to meet one police officer who is crooked. I'll be honest. I've known some police officers who've gone fired before for maybe insubordination or did something. But when those police officers are on their on the jobs, they are dedicated to enforce things.
Did you not see the video of George Floyd being murdered?
I saw the video.
And what did you make of that?
Well, I also saw the video of Rodney King being beaten way back in the 90s. Okay. The video only shows so much. I'm not saying anything was Photoshopped there, but a lot of details happen in there. There's a lot of swearing going on. I'm talking about any general video. Okay. Yes, I saw the video. I can't roll a deck to my memory right now and talk and analyze about that George Floyd video. But
well, let me just refresh your memory. The police officer's got his knee on George Floyd's neck for 9.5 minutes.
He said, "I can't breathe." Yeah. He said, "I can't breathe." All right. Yeah. All right. The police officer, he was convicted. He got punished for it. Okay. I'm just getting, you know, and again, when a police officer makes a mistake, it goes to court just like anyone else. They're not above the law, and that's the case, and they get punished. The officer was found guilty. He's in jail now.
And there have been other instances of police brutality, though. It's not just that one officer. I mean, Milwaukee has a reputation. Chicago, Philadelphia, L.A. police departments have had really bad reputations for police brutality and racist police practices. I agree with you. Most police officers are doing their job and are doing a courageous job, and police officers should be respected for the work they do. I know some cops here in Madison who've done a great job. So don't get me wrong. But there is that history and that practice of police brutality that is a problem. And so would you do anything about that as governor?
I'll be watching. They'll go up to the chain of command, and I'd be on top of that. But like I said, I put a lot of trust into the law enforcement. I really do. And so I'll just leave it like that. But I don't want anyone in Wisconsin thinking that I won't be watching the police.
And what about ICE? What about immigration officers in Wisconsin sent here by Trump, masked, grabbing people off the street, throwing them into unmarked vans and driving away?
I'll see it right now. That's the feds. Okay. I'm not going to mess with the feds. I mean, if they do some things that affect the ongoing at the state level as governor, I'll get with our Senator Tammy Baldwin. Now, I'm not going to put words in her mouth if she'd help us or not, but I know she'd listen. So obviously I'll let the feds do their job, and I'm going to run my state, provided I'm governor.
Part of running the state is running the state National Guard. What if Trump wants to, you know, say the Wisconsin National Guard's got to go police in Portland, Oregon? How would you respond to something like that?
Well, I don't like the micromanaging, that's for sure. So we'll see. But I would definitely talk if Donald Trump won't take my phone call. I'm sure I can get a hold of someone in the staff, and I'll be working with the Democratic Senator Tammy Baldwin and our two congressmen here. And but like I said, it's just I don't want the president stepping on our National Guard. And so I'll be taking opinions from all across, and I'll make a decision when it comes.
And then switching over to health care, on your website, you say health care administration will be on a tight leash. What do you mean by that?
I mean that it'll be on my watch, and I don't want to see anything. If I see something, I'm even assign a task force, but if I see any evidence of overbilling or negligent billing in that case where my residents have to pay too much in medical bills, I'm definitely going to address that.
What about expanding Medicaid? It hasn't happened in the state. Most states have expanded Medicaid. including states, I think, like Mississippi, even Wisconsin's one of the few who hasn't. Are you in favor of expanding Medicaid?
I am in favor of expanding Medicaid, yes.
And where are you on, like, universal health care, single payer?
I'm okay with that as long as it benefits the consumer.
Don't you think it would benefit the consumer if all of us essentially could have Medicare for all and then just kind of get rid of the middlemen in the insurance industry?
Well, definitely, yes. So, no, I mean, I'm usually against the middleman. I mean, I heard what was being talked about in the latest budget negotiations over Capitol Hill about getting rid of middlemen. Yeah, but no, I do like it when you get rid of another party, because what that does, it just adds up costs. And the rich get richer, and of course the working class gets poor, and I don't want that.
One of the issues I worked a lot on at the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign was gerrymandering. What's your view of gerrymandering, and how do we solve that problem?
You gotta go off what the law says. I know there's talk about trying to gerrymander the congressional districts now, but it does have me scratching my head as well. You know, I mean, if Wisconsin's a purple state, you know, then how come we have two Democratic districts at the moment and, you know, six Republican districts? So that definitely needs to be looked at.
I know there is an effort to, in the courts, to go after the gerrymandering at congressional districts. But what I'm driving at is, do you think partisan gerrymandering should be banned by the legislature and the governor, and an independent commission should establish the lines like they do in Iowa, for instance, in a nonpartisan way? Or should whichever party wins be able to draw the lines the way they want?
No, I think what you said first about partisan commission, you know, it should be even.
So
it's been that way before. Yeah, it's been, I would support. Yeah, it's been that way before 20, 30 years ago. That, in fact, I used to chat with Scott Walker back when I was a Democrat, and he would talk that way too about, you know, let the courts handle it. That'd be the way of doing it. So,
well, but Walker had the biggest gerrymander in American history practically in 2011. So it wasn't.
Well, yeah, Scott Walker once said though that he wouldn't do right to work legislation, wouldn't sign it, and then when the Republicans brought it to his desk on a virtual silver platter, he went right ahead and signed it. He started bragging about it because he knew he had a presidential campaign coming up. So Scott Walker's known to pull some fast ones.
You said you talked to Walker. How did that happen?
That was back when I ran for assembly in 2000. You know, he was, again, you know, they're recruiting me more so to be a token candidate, run against an incumbent, because the strategy for the Republicans then was to keep the incumbent Democrats from going up north to help with those swing districts up there. And so I remember Walker called the House a few times and, you know, telling me a whole bunch of stuff and, you know, and like that. But he basically said something about, after that election, I was a Republican about 2 months before I went to the Democratic Party. It was in St. Patrick's Day, actually, of 2001. But I was talking to Scott through an email. And, yeah, he just kept on saying the courts will decide. But that was back when it was a Republican assembly and a Democratic Senate. So, but like I said, I think knowing Scott, had Republicans would have had both houses back then, I think he probably would have went ahead and he would have been gerrymander happy, although back then he was just a state assemblyman in Wauwatosa.
Yeah, but when he was governor, he sure was gerrymandering happy. Hey, looking back at Walker, what do you make of the Walker rule here, Walker's administration here, record here in Wisconsin?
It made me sick. It made me sick. I mean, he went ahead and imposed Act 10. He did not say anything about that in his campaign. You know, it's just in, I think what got him not elected for that third term was because he just listened to the corporate people, and he wanted their money and wanted their money and wanted their money. And there was also a non-binding referendum that benefited us as a Democrat about legalizing pot. And that may have got some more Democrats on board. So we finally got him out of there. I was so excited that day. I went in celebrate off my patio with a bottle of champagne. And I told Maggie Dunn this, my last interview I had with you guys, is that about a week later after Tony got elected, I stumbled at my overnight job. I was working at a foundry then, and I was like, I said to myself, you know, Ryan, you should run for governor. And, well, now here I am running for governor 7 years later.
It's a long shot by any estimation, Ryan. So people listening may be saying, you know, why the hell is this guy doing it? And, you know, you're spending money. You're spending a lot of time. I mean, was this a lifelong ambition of yours? I mean, you had some political ambition because you ran for state assembly once. I know some folks, you know, they don't want to go to their grave without at least giving it a shot. You know, are you one of those guys?
I'll start by saying I'm in it to win it. And secondly, I'll say, yes, I have some catching up to do in the polls. While I'm ahead of Brett Halsey, I'm not ahead of Kelder Royce, Missy Hughes, Sarah Rodriguez, David Crowley, and Francesca Hong. But that doesn't mean I don't believe I can catch up to them. I have a fundraiser coming up and some other projects. Now, by saying that, I'm having a time in my life running for governor right now.
Really?
And I'm giving, I'm having a time in my life. This is what I live for. I'm not married. I do have some divorces under my belt, but I have a real nice 24-year-old daughter, and I'm 54 years old. And this, I don't know, this is just part of my fabric. It's something I want to do. I love doing it.
How many times have you been divorced?
Three.
Wow.
Yeah.
Third time, not the charm, huh?
No, I mean, I financially paid off. I don't want to get too much into detail, but, you know, all three of them, I haven't heard from the first one in a while. I was married back when I was in the military. But the second wife I had, Michaela, with her daughter. Matter of fact, we had a birthday dinner for my daughter a few nights ago, and her mom was there. We had a nice time. Matter of fact, she even helped stamp some envelopes for me on my campaign, ex-wife number two. And I just talked to Heidi, my last ex-wife. We divorced like 8 years ago, and I was helping her out with something too. And I told her, she knew I was running for governor. I said, please vote for me. And she said, we'll talk about it. So I'll leave it at that.
All right. And so what is so much fun about running for governor right now for you?
Something new to do. It's a challenge. And best of all, I love hearing what people have to say. And I love talking to the citizens. They're the ones who make the vote. We're doing this the Democratic way. We're voting for who's going to be governor. And I just feel proud and empowered and love the responsibility of just trying to be the leader of the state.
And what do Democrats need to do to win, both in trying to get the base out and then trying to talk to people who may not have voted Democrat for a while?
Not get complacent and keep talking to people and maybe promote a little bit of bipartisanship. I want to see some bipartisanship return. We haven't had in a few decades.
If someone wants to support your campaign, Ryan, how do they do that?
Two ways. They can go to my website, Ryan Sternad. You see the spelling in the background here, forgovernor.com. And I also have a Facebook page. Again, that's Ryan Sternad for governor.
Is there anything I haven't asked that you wanted to talk about? Any last point you want to make?
Yes. I took an interview with Vanessa Keltzen on Masson, and I brought up a suggestion of a way for schools to make some money is to resort to selling alcohol at school events, whether it be football games or even some theater events, running a liquor bar there. And I got a lot of feedback from it, all different views. But I do want to say this, though, and I'm not going to back off of that, but I do want to see schools maybe start to thaw that divorce they have when it comes to incorporating alcohol or establishments associated with alcohol as to helping them, because I think that that could be one avenue to generate some much needed revenue there for the school system.
But isn't alcoholism a terrible problem for young people?
Well, again, I mean, one thing I forgot to tell you, I'm not saying we're going to serve alcohol to teenagers and all that. I would be open to lowering the drinking age to 19, not 18, but 19. Make sure kids are graduating from school first. Now, selling alcohol, yes, you know, having a football game there, parents drinking, and we have a student section. I do find that a little bit rude. It also would be an issue about where you store the alcohol. Storing alcohol on school property, that'd be swallowing something. But like I said, I think having the understanding. Something also, too, is that it could also teach the kids growing up, is there an environment with alcohol around them? Is that, well, you know, look but don't touch. I mean, because it could resist that temptation to want to get in alcohol. So it could promote some responsibility as kids are growing up, and they can stay away from the alcohol until they're old enough, even when they're old enough. And like any adult should be doing, should always drink responsibly. So I think, like I said, it's a touchy subject, but that could be a gold mine as far as revenue if we were to go that route.
Well, let me just touch the subject one more time. You've been a beer vendor at Brewer Stadium for many years. My sense, I wasn't born in Wisconsin. I've been here 45 years, but I think the level of alcohol consumption in this state is just kind of crazy, and the celebration of the alcohol culture is kind of crazy. What's your view on that?
I see it firsthand in my brewer's job, okay? The brewers thrive off that alcohol revenue we give them there. I will say this, however. Since I worked there since 88, I missed 3 years. I was in the 90s in the Army. The number of arrests that have happened during Brewers games have gone way down since the 90s. We used to have fights in those county stadium bleachers all the time. We'll have something here and something there at AmFam Field. But it's just that, I mean, Wisconsin's known for alcohol. That's true. But we can still walk and chew gum at the same time. We could drink the alcohol, but also be careful.
Well, Ryan Sternett, been a pleasure. A very interesting conversation we've had. Thanks for being on the Wisconsin Forward podcast, and good luck on the campaign.
I appreciate it. Thank you, man.
Well, that's going to have to be it for this episode of the Wisconsin Forward podcast on the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm Matt Rothschild. I want to thank you for listening. I also want to thank my engineer and producer, Dom Lee, who's always great to work with. And I want to thank Sage Weil of Civic Media for giving me this platform. I'll be back in just a day or two with another Democratic candidate for governor, so stay tuned for that.